Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
All right, all, welcome back. Sports Talk Saturday. Nate Geary here. Hour two coming your way. Jam-packed hour two, as I previewed last segment. Starting off this segment on the West Her Hotline is WKBW reporter and anchor Madison Carter. Madison is also the president here of the Buffalo Association of Black Journalists and one of my favorite new local people. Madison, first and foremost, I really appreciate you making some time. It's Saturday afternoon, so I know you probably got some plans outside of just, you know, joining Sports Talk radio shows, but I really appreciate you making some time for us.
Listen, this is like a dream come true. Everybody who asked me what I wanted to do growing up, it was to be in like sports journalism. And so I called my dad. I was like, Dad, the sports guys are talking to me. I have made it. This is it. So thanks for having me on. No, I'm just drinking this afternoon.
So okay, that's good. That's good. So just a normal Saturday. Okay, good.
Normal Saturday.
Well, you know, I was going to say, I was going to call BS real hard if you were going to try to tell me, my dream was to become a sports talk radio personality. And then I was going to say, Madison, you aren't fooling a damn person. So I appreciate you, you know, not tooting my horn too much on that.
I would do like a little radio, maybe a little podcast on the side. But, you know, everyone knows how I feel about people seeing my outfits. So I'd have to do a little something on the screen.
Yeah, you'd have to definitely do some kind of video cast for sure, for sure, for sure. Well, the reason I wanted to bring you on today, obviously, it's been a pretty remarkable week. 2020 has been a pretty remarkable year. I guess maybe remarkable isn't the best word to use, but I guess we're trying to stay positive in these times. So remarkable's semi-positive. We'll stick with it. You know, I wanted to bring a sports perspective to this whole thing because I think right now, maybe more, I mean, more than my lifetime, I'm 28 years old, I'm not old, and I haven't really been around long enough to really get a feel of what the civil rights era was about in sports. But Madison, with everything going on, the sports, the feel of it, the look of it, the sound of it, fake fans, modified schedules, social distancing, like nothing is normal. Yeah. So why should we expect anything to be in the current times normal? But I would say the stage in professional sports that we have right now and the role they're playing on society and to try to really implant change across our entire country. Like, do pro athletes have more influence now than maybe they've ever had? And I know that's maybe a staggering thing to say, but with the platforms and everything else, the maybe it's even more so the personalities in pro sports. Like, it feels right now more than ever they have more of an influence outside of their respective sports than maybe ever before.
You know something, Nate? I don't think that athletes have more influence now than they ever have. I think it's that athletes understand the influence that they have. They've always had it. We all watched together in quarantine the Jordan documentary where he just kind of was like, hey, that's not my thing. We're going to be hands off. But he had the influence, right? Because people were asking him to come out, to make a statement. The thing is, and I grew up, so a little background on me for some of your listeners that might not know, I grew up in a family with professional athletes. My dad played pro football for about a decade, retired. Now he works for the Players Union. And then I got to see it all the way up. My brother, the whole high school, the recruiting process, him going to the leagues and then, you know, retiring. So I've seen the professional sports sphere shift in my dad's generation. You went to work and you came home. In my brother's generation, as a pro athlete, you have to do more. You have to be more. I think they're understanding their influence more, I think that they now realize, like, oh, people are tuning in to see us. And it's like, there used to be this attitude of like, we're just happy to be here. And that attitude, I think, is completely gone. Athletes aren't just happy to be here. It's like, this is a job. This is work. We're entertaining you. And people really only want to see athletes in three places: sports, on a stage, or in a casket. I meant to say black people. They only want to see black people on sports, stage, or a casket. And we really have understood that. And now athletes are starting to say, no, I think you need to care more about what I care about if you want to see me do the things you want to see me do.
And I think too, Madison, to kind of build on your point, right? Like, the thing to me now in sports is each of the major sports leagues have 30-something teams, right? Like, baseball's got 30 teams. Mm-hmm. NHL is now going to have 32 teams. The NFL has 32 teams. The National Basketball Association has 30 teams. That is a lot of geography that each of those respective leagues cover. It's not like they're covering from sea to sea. And I think now more than ever, with the access to social media, I guess my question then to build off what you're saying is, what does then the role of social media play in these athletes' ability to actually go out and do something? Because to your point, before, maybe it was an acknowledgement of or an understanding of what their role could potentially be. But in 1970, like, what's your options? Like, you have to sort of be dramatic in the way that you create, you know, traction. Like, now an athlete can do it right from their phone. And I do think that maybe the availability of that, you know, the ability to just do it right there on your phone, I think is probably also leading to a more wide and widely and loudly spoken group of players. No?
Yeah, absolutely. You can reach people all the way across the country, like you just said, with a few words, and they're listening and they're following. And honestly, I don't know, like, our generation, I don't know what you tell your parents about where to find news, but I'm like, Mom, if you want the most up-to-date, you got to go on Twitter, because it's just like second by second, which can be good or bad. And I think so Twitter is that space where people can really get what's going on and learn and understand. Like, I know even me, I go online and just hearing people's thoughts, I'm like, oh, I didn't know that, or like, that's a great way to explain this. And I'm just thinking about even that influence is trickling down. You see some of the LeBron saying, like, we need to support our people, we need to put money back into our community, and that trickles down to these five-star recruits now going to HBCUs. Before, it was all you knew was Alabama, which maybe football, or, you know, the big basketball school, Kentucky. And now you have this, I think it's McCormaker. Do you remember this? He's a five-star recruit that committed to Howard over, like, all the big basketball schools.
Yes, this would have been this year, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's so this kid is learning from all these influential athletes who are online being like, nope, you have control. You get to decide where people are looking. You get to decide where their money is. And now it's these young kids, they're like, oh, okay, I understand. And they're doing that. And it's all, I think you're right, social media. Because what else? How else can you hear from LeBron second by second? You can send him a message and get a response back. And he has influence, right? So it's very cool what we're seeing right now.
Madison Carter here on the Wester Hotline. If you don't know Madison, she is a reporter and anchor over WKBW Channel 7 here locally in Buffalo, and also the president of the Black Association, or the Buffalo Association of Black Journalists. Madison, I want to move directly into the NBA, because I think their response, they were the first. Listen, I mean, Major League Baseball and the NBA both have a presence in Milwaukee. And I think each of those teams probably felt a duty to put the shooting of Jacob Blake's in the sort of spotlight, right? Like, it was probably, they felt a personal community type feel that they needed to go out and be sort of the teams ahead of this. But as the NBA sort of picked up where the Bucks were trying to start, it's not only the players, though, it's the coaches. And the support from ownership, to me, this is the first time a major pro sports league or a team has literally boycotted a game for social justice. Like, that to me is a step that I can't imagine. Maybe because of everything going on with 2020, we don't see that step taken, right? But because it was taken, what does that tell you about, you know, where these sports leagues are headed in this era? Because I think it's easy to say, well, hey, these players, they're doing their thing. That's incredible. But to have the support of coaches, to have the support of By the way, almost every single NBA owner is white. Like, to have that support that we are potentially hurting our brand in order to push forward the greater good, like, that has to mean something to people in your community, no?
Listen, with what you said, they're saying we're hurting our brand by not getting behind this. And I tell people as a reporter all the time, you know, I'm an investigative reporter. I cover racism, corruption, political accountability. But on the racism aspect, to get the greater audience to care, because I think often when people you hear, you talk about race, even on this show, they're talking about race, we're going to tune out and come back when we're talking about something that affects us all. No, you have to go for the money. Yeah. I have to show people in the money why they care. And that is painful to me as a black person, because I'm like, dang, I have to go for your pockets to get you to understand that you're supporting this in one way or another. But I think that's what those owners are doing. They're like, ooh, our money is at stake. But also, let's talk about the NBA. Let's just talk about them specifically. They've always, you know, especially in the recent years, they've been, okay, I'll say in the recent years, they've been some of the front runners in terms of getting behind the social and racial justice movement. And in my perspective, I think it's because it's a smaller league. The teams are smaller. The NFL, you got 80 guys on a team, and they come in and out all the time. With the NBA, it's a smaller team. You develop those relationships, and I think you really understand, because you're spending time with these people, with their families, the issues that they care about, and they can talk to you one-on-one and say, this is why you need to care, too. The WNBA, nobody talks about, but they've always, I mean, these women have constantly been right here talking about social justice issues, and now it's like, it's almost the same as like the black and white, how black people are saying like we need white people to be our allies to amplify our voices. The WNBA is now like, hey guys, over at the NBA, we need you to help amplify our voices, and they're answering that call. They're helping direct attention towards what the women have been doing for so much longer.
I think it's such a good point, Madison. I think that's such a good point, because, you know, and I mentioned this earlier this week when I was on the morning show filling in this week, talking about Maya Moore, and like the NBA is picking up where Maya Moore, I don't want to say left off, because she hasn't left the post. Like, she's still, and that, by the way, I just kind of realized I made a basketball pun there, and I didn't even mean to. But
it was good.
It was a good pun. But I think understanding the role that Maya Moore is playing. Maya Moore is, and you don't have to watch or even like the WNBA to look at what Maya Moore is doing and have just unbelievable levels of respect for her sacrifice. She's not a role player. She's not someone that, you know, is going to walk away from the sport and walk into a Fortune 500 company job where she's making the same amount of money she's making. Like, she made tremendous financial, personal sacrifices that a lot of us will never fully understand, being the face of the WNBA, walking away for social justice. I know we talk about the NBA because they're the ones with this large, millions, billions of people follow the NBA. But what Maya Moore did, I'm so glad that you brought that point up, because she does not get enough credit.
She doesn't get enough credit, and it's you're right. I think the NBA is definitely picking up, and they're following her lead. And that's what people aren't saying. The whole league is following the lead, and all these leagues, following this one black woman's lead and saying, this is so much bigger than this sport. I get it. You're entertained. But our lives are at stake. Black lives are at stake. So if I have to leave this job and go do that, then that's what we're going to do. That's what all the NBA teams did. That's what they said. They're like, hey, we can't sit here and play a game while people are dying. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't even sound right when you say that. Do you know what I mean? So I think we're seeing all these leagues just understand what it's like when, and as a news anchor, I was up late last night just thinking about this after the Chadwick Boseman death, and, you know, like, colon cancer affects black men so much. And I'm just like, it was a sad night for me, because I'm like, black men just are not allowed to be alive. And I get up there on the anchor desk and I tell you a story about a black man being murdered on camera. And then I immediately go tell you a new story about how Dunkin' Donuts is bringing in a new milkshake. And I'm just like, this is not normal. It's not normal to see black people continue to be killed and then just move on to the next thing, move on to play the next game or the next game or the next game. It shouldn't be that way.
Yeah,
we can't keep doing that.
It's sort of like the, you know, the 24-hour news cycle encapsulated, right? Like, hey, we're really angry about this today, and we'll be angry about something tomorrow and excited about something the next day. And it's very difficult. And I think that's maybe why the timing of all this maybe isn't, it couldn't be more important to, and I don't want to say the movement, because I think by calling it the movement, we are, we aren't necessarily shining the proper light on it. It's not a movement. It's, I don't know. Maybe maybe you can explain this better for everyone, because it doesn't sound the way that I want it to sound coming from just being a white guy. But I think labeling it a movement just doesn't do the justice of what it actually is. It's a changing of what we've known as a society for our entire existence. That's not a movement. That's something much larger than that.
Right. And I think it's different, because I've done a bunch of comparison to the movement in the 60s and today, and everyone's saying, like, you know, we learned about this in school briefly, not enough as we should have. But and everyone's like, here's what I would have done. But it's different, because in that time, Black people weren't in these prominent positions. Social media didn't exist. The influence wasn't necessarily there. So this is, you're right, maybe it's not a movement. I hope it's not just a moment. But I just hope that this space that we're in right now, it's getting people to shed those ideas that this doesn't affect you. What we're seeing out there, and I even talked about this when I was out there covering these protests, I was like, there aren't a lot of Black and brown people out here.
Yeah.
It's people who don't look like us coming out and saying, hey, man, we can do better, and we have to do better. So honestly, what I think we're in right now is an educational shift. People are learning. I'm doing a lot of teaching, and there's a lot of understanding, but there's also like a long way to go, and we have to figure out how to make this understanding and this educational systemic, get it into the way that our society functions. And that's what I'm interested to see if that comes next.
You know, Madison, I don't know if you know this about me. I have a full-time job. I'm in sales. And one of the things, I'm a sales manager, and one of the things that I tell my sales reps is a really good salesperson listens twice as much as they talk. And I think that the same application probably should be applied to a lot of people that look like me, is spend more time listening and less time talking, because frankly, we just aren't educated enough. And it's not because the information isn't available. It's mostly because there wasn't a willingness to hear, to listen. And now with, you know, and I think, what was it, Will Smith that said, you know, there hasn't been a lot that's changed. We just have video cameras now. And I think as important as it is that we are seeing this now, because I think that for the real change to happen, we need more, we need to see it more. We need to actually be able to feel it, see it, find the emotional attachment in a lot of these frankly horrifying videos of Black men being killed in the streets. And I think for you, like, your role in this, Madison, is really, really important. It's reporting the news, of course, but the emotional attachment that that I can't have, because it doesn't affect people that look like me as much, right? I think it's really important, your role, and I know this really isn't a question, but it's more so of me just kind of thanking you, because I think you've done a really good job teaching, and I think more people need to be willing to listen, and I hope that throughout this process that we all learn listening is a really good and important thing on being better, because we can't be better without listening.
And I appreciate that, Nate, and I honestly do, because it gets exhausting and it gets tiring. And even, you know, I'm looking at some of the comments online, and it's like, I'm having Madison Carter on. You didn't say anything about who I am or what I do. And people are like, great, we're going to be lectured about race. And I'm like, what? What does that mean? Because online, it's like I'm telling these stories, and I'm just telling stories about people who look like me and sharing that experience. And even this just happened recently in our community here in Buffalo. A man was arrested. His name's Eric Martin at a Speedway. He was arrested, taken down in front of his family because a store clerk called and said he stole a lottery ticket that he bought. He was strip searched and taken to jail. And he's like, I'm innocent. And I really didn't want to tell that story, because I was like, this could have been our George Floyd. It's a $30 lottery ticket. And this man was just taken in. And I am constantly saying, in the sports angle, I wrote an essay a while ago, just talking about like why I really want to, when I introduce my dad, I feel this need to like tell people like, oh, he's an NFL player. Because I think when people see Black men, they just see them as black men. They see them as threats. But athletes have always had this little bit of immunity, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I want people to know that, like, and even with that situation with Eric, I had the news conference yesterday, they were trying to justify why he was a contributing member to society. He's a homeowner. He's 30 years old. He has a good job. And I'm like, why does that matter?
Yeah.
Why does that matter? But it's like when you tell people, like, oh, he's an NFL player, all of a sudden their mind shifts. Or the NBA player, oh, their mind shifts. And I'm just like, there's so many black men that didn't have the opportunity to even say why they should be alive, you know? And it's just, it's a difficult time and space to be living in, I think, when you have to justify your existence to people.
Yeah. And listen, Madison, at the end of the day, I think the best things that all of us can do, again, is continue listening. But I'm happy to have given you a platform today to talk to people that maybe wouldn't have come across you otherwise. This is a diverse community here in Buffalo, and it's not always the most welcoming, but there are a lot of very, very, very good people in this community who care a lot about it and the well-being of everyone in the community. And I'm just happy that, you know, you're part of it. You're pushing forward the things that need to be pushed forward in this community. And I'm really, listen, I know you're not going to be here long, Madison. You're destined for bigger and better things. So while you're here, I know a lot of us are going to be looking on with being very proud to have you representing the community, and me as one of them. So thank you again, making some time for me on a Saturday afternoon. I know it's not the most fun on a Saturday afternoon spending time talking sports and everything else in life, but I do really, really, really appreciate it.
Listen, I had a blast, and I agree. Thank you so much for just giving me this platform and allowing me to reach a different audience and have a conversation with you. I think it's meaningful and it's impactful, and I appreciate you so much.
No, my pleasure, Madison. And again, I'm looking forward to your growth, not only in this market, but as you move on in your career, we'll be watching very proudly over here.
All right. Appreciate it. I'll see you soon, Nate.
Thanks. Madison Carter there, WKBW on the Wester Hotline. That was a great... That was a very awesome interview. Not that I thought that it wasn't going to be, but I think it touched on a lot of things that we needed to touch on, frankly. And, you know, I think I don't blame people who either follow me on Twitter or listen to me here on the station and say, well, Nate, you know, you're holier than thou, and you've got all these great takes on, you know, what the world should be, but, you know, you don't represent, you're not bringing people on that represent these communities that are, for the most part, being treated so poorly. And, you know, I wanted to give Madison a platform to speak about her experiences, but she has a sports angle, as she mentioned. And I think that sports angle is actually more important when trying to connect people. And I hope all of us, you know, grow a little bit from the experience and hearing Madison. She's absolutely phenomenal. And like I mentioned, she's not going to be here in Buffalo for very long. She's destined for, you know, for big markets across the country, national news. And, Sale was talking about this at 11:30, how proud this community is of the people when they go big. The Jeff Glores of ABC News, I believe Jeff Glores. All of us, how proud we were when CBS, was it CBS? It's ABC or CBS. And I apologize for not knowing that. We should figure that out at some point. But, you know, just be how proud everyone was when he got the evening news anchor job. I see that similar path, like, kind of playing out for Madison. So it was really awesome to have her on the show. 803-0550, 1-888-552-550. Quick timeout. Other side, Ryan Talbot, Syracuse.com. We are going to talk a little bit more about the defensive side of things at the scrimmage on Thursday, figure out what else we've got going on with 2 weeks going leading up. I'm also going to get his thoughts on the kicker battle, how that played out as well. So that's coming up here next on WGR. Okay, everybody, welcome back. Got two more guests coming your way for the rest of the show, and then we're kicking it off for the rest of the weekend. Let's head to the Wester Hotline now because my man Ryan Talbot's joining me. First and foremost, Ryan, I know this morning you tweeted about Chadwick Roseman's unfortunate death. Being a movie buff like I know you are, tough day, huh? 2020 is not really getting much better as it seems.
No, without a doubt. And, you know, here's a guy that was battling colon cancer for 4 years, and he's shooting movie after movie after movie without really letting on what was going on in his personal life. So Kudos to him for that. But yeah, very sad day. A phenomenal young actor. I mean, 43, way too young to go. But definitely used his time here on this earth wisely and shared that gift with many others.
No doubt about it, Ryan. Let's dig into football. There was a lot to talk about this week. Obviously, the scrimmage going on Thursday. I had an opportunity earlier to speak to Sal about it. But I wanted to get some of your thoughts on the kicking competitions that ended up playing out this week. First and foremost, Stephen Hauschka cut this week. Maybe even before we talk about the competition, I don't know if there's something you want to talk a little bit about Stephen Hauschka's, you know, I would say shorter-lived career here in Buffalo. I think he came on very, very hot to start his career, and things slowed down, and I think a lot of that gets pointed back to that Henry Anderson hit.
Yeah, without a doubt. The blindside hit that he took right in that Jets game, it seemed to be a downward spiral from there. He was banged up after that point. I know Anderson ended up getting fined by the league. It wasn't flagged on the play. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, from that point on, it seemed like something was just off, especially when it came to those longer kicks. When he came on, he was very good. As the years have gone, though, he's gone through some rough patches last year. I think that Cowboys game was probably the low point of his 2019 season where missed an extra point. I think he had a field goal that he may have missed. He had another one that hit off the uprights and went in, actually. And after that, the Bills actually tried to bring back kicker Chase McLaughlin, but another team ended up claiming him ahead of them. So, you know, he had his ups and downs here, but for the most part, there was a lot more good than...
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T, or download the List app on the App Store today.
Bad, but it was definitely time to turn the page and go with Tyler Bass.
You know, and that's going to lead me to Tyler Bass here. Ryan, do you get the feeling that there were just too many factors running against Stephen Hauschka? And maybe those factors are age, his salary cap hit this year and next year. And not only the salary cap of him, but what hit freeing up that salary cap might be able to mean for Brandon Bean's attempt to re-sign guys like Matt Milano and Tre'Davious White, who's going to be coming up here rather shortly. So, like, do you believe it was maybe Tyler Bass was that good in camp, or do you believe Tyler Bass was good enough for them to just not be able to overlook the other things?
I just think, really, as long as Bass was neck and neck with Hauschka, even if he was a little bit worse than Hauschka, you could justify the decision for the reasons that you mentioned, the cap space, the fact that you have some players coming up soon where you're going to need that money. But there's also on-the-field issues as well that I think getting rid of Hauschka made a lot of sense. For one, you weren't going to trust him to kick those field goals from 50 yards now. And, you know, Tyler Bass, whether or not he makes those kicks, well, it's yet to be seen, but he has the leg to do so. Touchbacks were an issue where Hauschka isn't going to be able to necessarily kick the ball into the end zone consistently. And even in this scrimmage that took place on Thursday, the wind's really howling, and Bass had no trouble cutting into the wind and kicking one through the end zone and then one deep enough into the end zone to create a touchback. So you have to consider those factors, where the Bills play, what it's like here in November and December, and think about the field position battle as well. So, you know, you would like to think that with the Bills in this offense that there's only going to be maybe a less than a handful of games. I'm talking maybe two or three that might come down to a field goal at the end of the game. And hopefully Bass can come through in that situation. But this wasn't a situation where you just hold on to Hauschka just because. Now, if you wanted to carry two kickers because of COVID concerns, because of the way the NFL could be this year, totally get it. But there are too many factors working against Hauschka, especially from that salary perspective that you mentioned.
And then how about as for Bohorquez, Ryan? Like, what's your confidence level with him heading into the season? He obviously won the job, but I mentioned this to Stale. I wonder if it's less about him winning the job and the two other guys not really competing at a high enough level to actually push Bohorquez.
I think you said it perfectly right there. I think the people that they brought in haven't been able to show enough to show the Bills that they could move in another direction. You know, Bohorquez is interesting because he had a lot of kicks inside the 20. He had some really good games, but he's just that punter that has those maddening moments all too often where he shanks the ball or the ball only goes 30-some yards. The net punting average isn't where you want it to be. So it just seems like the Bills are looking. They're just not looking in the right places, and the younger Bohorquez keeps kind of edging out these players that they bring in. So when roster cuts take place across the league, would I be shocked if the Bills signed another punter and replaced Bohorquez? I wouldn't, but right now they're probably saying, you know, there's not enough out there on the market to really push him at this point in time.
Are you surprised? I know this is kind of a one-off question, but we're talking about punters. We might as well. Are you surprised Marquette King's not in the league? Like, he's posting videos. The guy's healthy. And when he was in the league, he was one of the league's premier punters.
Yeah, I actually thought King was really good in the XFL, too. I thought that he was kind of booming the ball there. I thought he still showed that he had a leg. I know that when he was in his prime, you know, he had some issues in terms of maybe showboating or rubbing some people the wrong way, but I think he's been out of the league long enough where, one, that's not an issue anymore, or wouldn't be an issue anymore, and two, he can still kick. At the end of the day, you want a punter that can still, you know, help you with the field position, pin a ball down inside the 20, use the sidelines in terms of punting as well, and I think he can still do all of those things at a high level.
Ryan Talbot here on the Wester Hotline, writer for New York Upstate. Ryan, before I ask you about Josh Allen, one of the things I wanted to ask you about is obviously Deion Dawkins gets his signing out of the way. The Bills were able to lock him up and get that taken care of. Are you at all surprised, though, that there hasn't been more movement or chatter about Milano's extension or potentially Trey White, who isn't exactly – obviously, out of the two there, Milano is the guy with 1 year remaining on his contract and is the one that's likely going to get signed first. I guess maybe saying, are you surprised that you haven't heard much? Maybe that's not a good question because we didn't hear anything about Deion Dawkins and then we just found out that he got signed. Same with Sean McDermott. This is an organization that is probably one of the tightest ships organizations in all of football in terms of leaks coming out about potential contract movement. But are you at all surprised that we haven't seen much on Milano yet?
I'm not, for the reasons you just said. They kind of keep things in-house. I think that they tell agents, you know, we'd really prefer if nothing gets leaked out. I think the agents respect that because at the end of the day, you see the deals do get done. Getting Dawkins done first, I thought was a good idea because that left tackle position, that market's just going to keep going up higher and higher. I thought he rebounded really nicely after a tough second season and showed the team what he could do. I think that he's answered a lot of questions off the field, too, in terms of leadership, being the only non-skill player to attend that workout in Florida, being a guy that kind of reaches out to all of his teammates. So he checked a lot of boxes on and off the field. Getting that deal done now, it's going to look smart down the road where those deals for left tackles keep going up and up and up. So to get him at that salary point where they did, I thought was good. Milano is, you know, he did come out and say that he can't envision playing anywhere else other than Buffalo. I think that the Bills are probably going to try to find a way to get that deal in, but work it out long term in terms of, okay, we know we have Trey White. We know we're down the road. We have Edmonds. We might have Josh Allen if he proves himself to be that franchise QB. So Brandon Bean, I'm sure, is sitting there and saying, how can I manipulate the cap from a year-to-year basis in terms of, okay, this is where Milano would get the big payday in this year, and how can I work that? So it's not as simple as sitting down saying, I'll give you this much money on average over this much time. I'm sure a lot of thought goes into it, but I think that Milano is so important to this defense, and I know it's a outside linebacker position, and you can make the argument you could find another one in the draft, and you very well could. But from day one, Milano, once he got into the starting lineup, has been a perfect fit for this defense. He's been a great player for this defense, flying under the radar quite a bit in terms of league-wide, but Bills fans know just how important he is to the system. So in time, I think something will get done there.
All right, Ryan, I got an easy one for you here. This is a underhand slow ball pitch, right? Josh Allen, August 2020 versus Josh Allen, 2019. Where do you believe the biggest strides in his game have come in the last calendar year?
Well, intermediate area in terms of what we saw on the field last year, but what we've seen so far in training camp, what we've read, it seems like there has been some successes with the deep ball. We've seen the videos where he's thrown it downfield with Diggs, with Gabriel Davis and other players. Jen Brown's made some plays in camp. So I think that every year he does truly want to work on one aspect of his game, and he shows strides. So in terms of what I want to see this year, I want to see him incorporate that deep ball. Now, mind you, games aren't won and lost on the deep ball. He can kind of hit those intermediate passes and still win you games here in Buffalo. But if he can hit one deep ball every week for that 30, 40 yards, you know, defenses are going to back off a little bit, and that's going to open things up underneath. So things all go hand in hand. Another area where I want to see Allen in this offense improve, though, is the screen game. I thought that last year they were completely underwhelming, and I don't know what it is. I don't know if defenses saw something pre-snap where they just kind of knew, but other than that 49-yarder Singletary in the Washington game, there weren't many other running back screens that went for much of any gain. So if you can get the screen game going too, then all of a sudden those simple passes are going to go for big yards, and the whole Josh Allen 300-yard discussion, it becomes a lot easier for him if he can hit those screen passes that go for 20, 25 yards. You know, they couldn't hit those last year for whatever reason, so I know the intermediate stuff was great last year. I hope he can pick up from that, but let's see some deep balls get completed with the talent that they have on this roster, but also utilize the screen game. I liked what I saw in the video that the Bills shared yesterday, where they had both backs on the field, it looked like, for that play, because then defenses aren't going to know exactly where it's going to if it is a screen play, and you can kind of work that to your advantage.
You know, one of my theories about the screen game, Ryan, was because of the effectiveness that Josh Allen has running the football, I always got the sense that the way defenses defended that skill set probably caused a lot of the issues that they had trying to throw the screen, with those defensive ends staying at home, being, you know, having that fear that Josh Allen was going to beat him around their face and then potentially have the ability to make a big play with his feet. Do you get that same sense? And to your point, I think if you can try to disguise those plays a little bit more, maybe that's how you create that success in the screen game.
Well, you know, now that you bring it up and mention it like that, I think it makes a lot of sense, because you're right. You go back, you try to draw the players in, and then you let it go, and for whatever reason, those players weren't biting on it. So maybe that was the reason, because he is so lethal with his feet. So, yeah, I don't want to say element of surprise, but if you can mask that a little bit better, I think you're going to have a much greater success on the field this year.
I think so, too. And that kind of leads me to the Zach Moss conversation, which he's been a hot topic amongst, like, the fantasy community. I think maybe rightfully so. This team, I think a lot of those people probably watched how much this team last year, and Brian Daboll in particular, used Frank Gore. And I think if you were just to replace Frank Gore's touches last season with Zach Moss, I think you're looking at an offense that could potentially see big ups this year in the run game and big play category. From what you've seen of Zach Moss, and maybe you can date back a little bit to this scrimmage on Thursday, like, what are you expecting from Zach Moss? He looked to have a very good scrimmage.
Yeah, from all accounts, he's a lot further ahead than where a lot of people thought he would be at this point, considering the way the offseason has been. He seems to be doing a fine job in blitz pickup, which I think would be one of the biggest areas where you keep a rookie outfield if they don't know what to do or know how to pick up blitz assignments. That can lead to disaster, so he seems to be doing well there. But then he's also running the ball well. Had the play of the scrimmage, Matt Perino at the site mentioned that he completely ran over Dean Moon, just kind of bulldozed him over. He did mention Moss, that is, after he was drafted, he wanted to make defenders make business decisions. Well, he's doing the same thing already at scrimmages with his own teammates. So he seems to be true in his word there. And then in terms of being a pass catcher, he can do that as well. So he's a well-rounded back, and I think he can make a much bigger impact than maybe some people thought. Early on, I wouldn't be shocked if the Bills use him in those short yardage, the red zone areas, close to the end zone to see what you can do, because they gave Frank Gore a lot of opportunities in those situations last year, and he often came up short, and then after that is when Josh Allen would take off and run with the ball and either pick up the first down or get those touchdowns near the goal line. So it's not like they were giving touches to just Josh Allen. They were giving their backs, specifically Frank Gore, opportunities last year, and Gore wasn't able to convert them. I think Moss absolutely can do so with the offensive line in front of him and just his natural ability.
Ryan Talbot here on the Wester Hotline. Ryan writes for New York Upstate. Ryan, before I let you go, I kind of wanted to get not necessarily predictions, but I'm wondering, I don't want to speak for you, but I do feel like you'd probably agree with me that the offense is looking like they're primed for a breakout season. I mean, just the added weapons, another year of Josh Allen, another year under the Brian Daboll system. We talked about the additions to the run game as well. Like, where do you think, though, your point of concern is? Like, what do you think could potentially lead to a letdown this season from the offense? And maybe you have one trouble area or area of concern you're thinking of here.
Well, I think if the offense fails, you have to wonder, is it Josh Allen or is it Brian Daboll? I mean, those are the two guys it comes down to. You have the weapons in the wide receiver game with Stephon Diggs, with John Brown, Cole Beasley, and even Gabriel Davis. And I know it sounds funny to throw a rookie into that mix, but he's been that impressive with the Bills, where I think he could actually be a factor in four wide receiver sets, something they didn't run much of last year. I want to say maybe less than 10 snaps with four wide receivers on the field, but I think you could actually do that with the personnel this year. You do have a good 1-2 punch, a young 1-2 punch at running back. The offensive line, for the most part, has returned. Obviously, John Feliciano's injury has opened up some competition on that right side of the line, and who's going to win, and does that mean Cody Ford plays inside or outside? So there's some questions there. But at the end of the day, if this offense falls flat on its face, it's going to come down to either Josh Allen regressed or didn't take that next step in his development, or Brian Daboll's play calling didn't help this team in some way, shape, or form. So you don't want to say anyone's on the hot seat necessarily, because they're coming off of a 10-win year. They look to be the favorites. But if they don't win this division and they don't have I would even say if they don't win a playoff game, then I would consider this season a failure for this team. So, you know, at the end of the day, if the offense struggles, it's going to either be Allen or Dable's fall, in my opinion.
Ryan, last thing before I let you go here, too. Week one, New York Jets, I asked this same question to Sal, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. Rich Cimini, ESPN Jets Nation reporter for ESPN this week, had a couple of back and forths during the it was during a media session with Adam Gase, and then kind of clapped back afterwards because the scrimmage was just so poor. It looked like from the media account that the backups beat the Jets starters 27-0, which is an eye-opener, to say the least. I think that's a nice way of putting it. What do you expect of that Jets team when they walk in and stroll in here on week one? Like, is that a team that could be the beginning of the end, almost like it was last year week one, where the Jets never recovered after losing that football game?
I could absolutely see that. I think that Adam Gase could get replaced very quickly this season. If they get off to a slow start, which isn't that out of the realm of possibility based on their schedule. But, yeah, I mean, they lost 27-0 to their backups, with obviously the first team playing the second team. Three turnovers on the six drives for Darnold in the offense. They said just today that Darnold didn't have a good practice, completed about 50% of his passes. And, you know, it's not all on Darnold. He's throwing to guys, new players left and right because of injuries. Even now, this Jeff Smith, who's been working with the ones, is injured. And they're signing Dante Moncrief, I believe I read today. You have Chris Hogan working in there with the ones. So they're very banged up at the wide receiver position. But, you know, the Bills should be – this is a game that if the Bills are for real, they should be able to handle this Jets team. And I'm not just talking rely on the defense and eke out a win. I want to see a double-digit win in week one to say, okay, this Bills team – they might be legit. Put away teams that you should put away, and put them away convincingly. Let's not have those 17-point comebacks like we saw last year in week one. Put them away by 17 points plus early on. You know, make sure that this game is out of control by the third quarter, in my opinion. Anything less than that, even though it's week one, and I'm sure that the Jets will have some we'll throw the kitchen sink, so to speak. There's always some gadget plays. I'm sure that Greg Williams will throw the kitchen sink at Josh Allen. But this is a game the Bills absolutely should win based on the talent, based on what each team is bringing back and how they've looked so far in training camp.
Awesome, Ryan. Appreciate you, brother. Thanks for hopping on with me. And looking forward to your work before the start of the season here. And obviously, as we head into the season, man, thanks. I appreciate your time.
Hey, thank you.
Of course, Ryan Talbot there of New York Upstate on the Wester Hotline. Quick timeout preview in Hour 3. Tim Delaney, South Park head coach, coming up at the 1 o'clock hour next on WGR. Well, tremendous first 2 hours of the show. If you missed any, WGR550.com, on-demand audio, check it out there. Got a good final hour coming your way next as well. We're going to talk a little high school football. We're going to talk that with South Park head coach Tim Delaney. That's coming up next here on WGR, so stick around. Again, if you missed any of our first three guests, Sal Capaccio, Madison Carter, or Ryan Talbot, WGR550.com/ on-demand audio. Of course, you can go there at the radio.com app as well. Rewind button, it's all available to you. However you want to listen, you have the ability to do so. So quick time out of the side. Tim Delaney joins me. We're going to talk some football. High school football's on TV right now. If you flip to ESPN, there is a high school football game going on. So football's back. We'll talk to Coach coming up next here on WGR.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.